I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. According to a new survey by the Public Religion Research Institute, the number of white evangelical Christians in America is declining. Since 2006, they have shrunk from 23% of the population to 14% in 2020. That is the headline-grabbing finding from this report that investigated religious identity in an increasingly diverse country. It looked at how religious affiliation intersects with geography, race and ethnicity, age and politics. While Christianity is still the dominant religion, about a quarter of the population has no religious affiliation, often called nuns, N-O-N-E-S. Today, we look at the country's religious landscape, the influences on religious identity, and how it shapes our politics. And joining us is Robert P. Jones, CEO and founder of PRRI, author of White Too Long, The Legacy of White Supremacy in American Christianity. He was raised in a Southern Baptist family, was active in the church, and graduated from Mississippi College, a Southern Baptist institution. Robert P. Jones, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Nice to have you with us. And to our listeners, and whenever we talk about religion, we get a lot of response, and I just want to make sure that folks have ways that they can join our conversation. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us at 1-888-477-9499. So, Robert, when you add up everyone in this country with some form of religious affiliation, can we say the United States is a religious country?
Well, absolutely, and particularly if we're comparing it to, you know, Western European nations. Sometimes the headlines in the country in the U.S. are, you know, as you said, that about a quarter of the country claims no religious affiliation. The fact that that is news and that, you know, is higher than we have measured since we've been measuring kind of modern statistics in the religious landscape, tells you something about how religious the country is. So we still have, the country's still about two-thirds Christian, if you count all Christian and ethnic groups, and it's about 5% non-Christian religious, and then about a quarter unaffiliated. So overwhelmingly, three quarters religiously affiliated country, and about a quarter who claim no religious affiliation.
Well, let's talk about this decline of white evangelical Christian or Protestants. As I said, that was the headline that has preceded or was in reaction to this report. What explains that?
Yeah, so, you know, it is a fairly stark decline, and it's a fairly new one that's really only been around for the last dozen years or so. If you rewind the clock back to 2008, for example, the beginning of Barack Obama's, or when he was running for election, white evangelicals made up nearly a quarter of the country. Mm-hmm. And today that number has dropped below 15%. It's 14.5%. So that's a fairly precipitous drop across this time period. It's actually part of a bigger drop among all white Christian groups in the country. So they represent one part of it. The other two groups are white mainline Protestants, typically the kind of non-Southern and tend to be a little more liberal end of the white Protestant world, and then white Catholics also. And really we've seen declines across, you know, all those groups. On the evangelical side, it's a complex mix of things. One thing we know is that they're losing younger members, right? So as they've become smaller, they've also become older. Their median age has now ticked up to 56 compared to the median age of 47 in the country. So they're shrinking, they're graying, and they're losing young people. Part of the reason they're losing young people really is, I think, that the positions that many conservative evangelical churches have staked out on LGBTQ rights, on climate change, on science in general, are on immigration, and on race, are at odds with the younger generation. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's just a kind of disconnect between the positions of many of these white evangelical churches and the next generation that they might have reached.
Well, and picking up on this age divide, can we also say that white Christians who are older, they're also just dying, so there are less of them?
Yeah, they're dying, and the birth rates are a factor here too. There's not replacement even there, but so it's a combination of kind of older generation dying, younger generation disaffiliating, and then birth rates thrown in as well.
Well, picking up on this, it's really interesting age difference. So when you look at the religiously unaffiliated, and perhaps we need a definition of that. Is that just someone who is agnostic or atheistic, or they just don't think about religion? How should we understand this group?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, and as you said, sometimes they get called the nuns, the N-O-N-E-S's,
right.
Not the N-U-N-S's.
Right, exactly, not to be
right,
confused.
To kind of get that clear on the radio. So these are folks who, when we ask, and I should say that all of these religious affiliations we're talking about are self-identified in our survey. So we ask people to self-identify. And so when we ask people, what is your religion? And we give them a big list, you know, you're Protestant, Catholic, Hindu, Muslim, Jewish, et cetera. These are people who, in that question, say they are nothing, in particular, hence the name the nuns, or say they're atheist or agnostic. So that's the definition of who those folks are. And they have grown quite considerably. So they're a quarter of the country today. If you go back to even as recently as the 1990s, they were in single digits in the 1990s. So they have grown, and among young people, they're nearly 4 in 10 of young people today claim no religious affiliation.
And they tend to be more urban. I don't think that would be surprising.
Yep.
And they also, we're seeing them in growth in both parties. So we're seeing these unaffiliated both in the Republican and also the Democratic Party, more in the Democrats, but also seeing them in Republican Party.
That's right. You know, is maybe not so surprising given they have become as big as they are, again, nearly a quarter of the country. But it's notable if we kind of go back and look at previous years, you know, like if we go back to like 2006, for example, you know, only 4% of Republicans and 9% of Democrats were religiously unaffiliated. And those numbers have grown in both parties, as you say today, but it's grown less in the Republican Party. They're only 13% unaffiliated compared to 23% unaffiliated among Democrats. So Democrats have basically come to look about like the country does in terms of their unaffiliated numbers, while Republicans are still overwhelmingly white and Christian and much less unaffiliated.
Well, let's talk about Christians of color. They make up, what, about 25% of the population?
That's right. Yep.
And I'm assuming so that would be all forms of Christianity.
Yeah, it's a broad range there. You know, the biggest groups are African-American Protestants. And then after that, with a whole range of denominations in that group. And then another group that's in that group, African-American Protestants have remained fairly stable over the last decade. One group that's really growing are Latino Protestants in the country. And that group, you know, is moving up. It's about 4% of the country. It also includes Latino Catholics, who are also about 8% of the country as well. And then Asian American, Pacific Islanders, Native Americans and others make up smaller proportions. But if you put them all together, they're about a quarter of the country.
Your study looks at all these various divides, and it is interesting to look at some of the geographic divides. I mean, the urban-rural divide, but even, you know, county by county, you were able to really drill down to find some really interesting information about divisions within a state, county by county.
Yeah, that's one of the things we're most excited about is, you know, this study, as you mentioned in the introduction, is has been 7 years in coming. It's an aggregate of data that we've collected over the last 7 years. It's 500,000 interviews conducted across those years and aggregated together. And at that level, we're actually able to then estimate county level religious diversity in the country and religious identity in the country. And one of the really fantastic things you see, and we have a more than a dozen maps down to the county level up on the website at PRRI. But one of the interesting things you see is you do see very similar, like, you know, we're all used to looking at the red and blue political maps. You see patterns that look a lot like that. If you look at religious diversity by county or white evangelical identity by county, you also see immigration patterns. So if you look at Buddhist, for example, and the distributions there, you see kind of a lot of West Coast and New York. If you look at Catholics, you see the Ellis Island story is still kind of concentrated in the Northeast and around New York. So you can kind of see the kind of cultural history of the country still written in these county level patterns that we see.
In fact, I looked at some of that in terms of white Christian identity by county. Somerset County in Pennsylvania was among the top 10. When it came to Muslims, Philadelphia is among the top 10. Mm. When it comes to, it's small, 4%, but nonetheless, and I thought, well, here we are, you know, kind of in our own backyard, an interesting example of what you're talking about.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, when you look in at, and you can see, I think particularly, you know, some of the conflicts that we're seeing in many states like Pennsylvania, Georgia, Texas. You know, we do see these big, sometimes, you know, fights between more urban counties and more rural counties. Some of that's about politics, but some of that's about religious identity as well and how that's intertwined with politics and how the urban areas look different. So, for example, yeah, you mentioned 4%
right.
Muslim. The nationwide average for Muslim identity is 1%, right? So the Philadelphia area has got, you know, four times the concentration of Muslims compared to the country as a whole, and much, much less than rural, you know, Pennsylvania counties, which have very, very few Muslims of any kind.
Let me ask you about the Catholic Church and even the Catholic scandals. Did that have any impact on the number of Catholics in this country?
So, you know, we know a little bit about that. We've asked in the past, how big a deal sex abuse scandals, you know, have been. And we do find among those who have left the Catholic Church, citing that as a reason, but it's one reason among others. And many of the reasons, have been, for example, I gave the example earlier. About a third of people who've left, both Protestant and Catholic churches, actually say that negative treatment of gay and lesbian people, or negative teachings about gay and lesbian people, were important reasons why they left the church. So it's a complex set of things, but the sexual abuse scandals certainly have played a role.
And we're almost having a break here, and I'm wondering about some of these other issues. You talk about LGBTQ issues. I'm wondering about abortion or climate change, immigration. Does that all factor into people's religious beliefs?
It does, and particularly around, again, younger people. You know, if you look at, I mean, for example, on, abortion, we've got, you know, kind of nearly two-thirds of younger people supporting abortion rights. We have nearly 80% supporting marriage equality, overwhelming support for, you know, or believing that climate change is real and human-caused and the need to do something about it. So it's in immigration, again, racial justice, all of these issues, there is really just has been this big disconnect between conservative white Christian churches, the Catholic Church, white evangelical churches in particular, and this younger generation.
Let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Robert P. Jones, CEO and founder of the Public Religion Research Institute. They're out with a gigantic new survey looking at religion in America, religious affiliation. We want to hear from you, as always. Radio Times at WHYY.org. Tweet us at WHYY Radio Times and do stay with us.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and if you're just joining us, we're talking about this new study by the Public Religion Research Institute, found among many things, a sharp decline in the number of white evangelical Christians in this country. We're digging deeper into this study to get a portrait of religion in America. And again, our guest is Robert P. Jones, CEO and founder of PRRI. He's got a new book, White Too Long, The Legacy of White Supremacy in American Christianity. A question from Gordon left it. He said, and this is to you, Robert P. Jones, your guest suggests that 75% of the population is religious. Of that 75%, how many people attend mass or services at least twice a month? I think that might be a better measure of religious engagement. I had that same question, which is, as you say, this is what people call themselves. And I guess the follow-up question is, so how do you live your life according to your religious beliefs?
Yeah, this is a great question. It's the in kind of sociological circles, you know, we're really talking here about the difference between identity on the one hand, which is what we've been talking about so far, and behavior, religious behavior, right? What people do in their lives. So how they think about themselves versus kind of what they do on a weekly basis. And it is absolutely right that we have been seeing the attendance levels across the board going down, you know, over the past few decades. You know, our latest, you know, survey has those who attend, you know, religious services, you know, down at you know, kind of historic down at historic levels. So if you look at just the people who say they attend at least once or twice a month, it really is only about a third of the country now who says, you know, if you can use that metric as kind of regular attendance, it's just a little bit more than a third of those, and that's heavily stratified by age. You know, that we have older people attending at higher levels than younger people, particularly seniors. That we have nearly half of seniors saying that they attend at least once or twice a month.
And there's that age divide that seems to run through a lot of this.
That's right.
This study. Here's a question from Claude. What do we know about the trends for Black Catholics from the guest research? Did you drill down on that? Did you look at Black Catholics?
You know, we have, you know, we do have data on that. Let me just pull that up. where they are. And it's important to say that this is a relatively small group in the country. Most surveys really can't get anywhere near, you know, measuring that, including most of our regular surveys. But because we have this larger survey, so among African Americans, we have 7% of African Americans that identify as Catholic. So, you know, less than 1 in 10. It's one of the smaller groups. They're overwhelmingly Protestant. And one interesting note here too is that about a third of African Americans do identify as evangelical, but they mean something very different by that than white evangelicals do, because African Americans in their voting patterns and their political patterns, you know, voted like 9 in 10 for President Biden, whereas white evangelicals voted 84% for former President Trump.
And just to, I do want to get Steve from Reading to join us, who probably wants to speak to that. But just so while they might call themselves evangelicals, their political beliefs and all the stuff associated with that is very different.
That's correct. Yeah, I think about that kind of the experience of kind of race really is acts in many ways like a prism. So you kind of take evangelical identity, it runs, you know, that light runs through the prism of race and it refracts into these two almost diametrically opposed political views, you know, based on race. And that's one of the more like notable, I think, things about the kind of relationship between religion and politics in the American landscape today.
I want to pick up on that. But first, let me get Steve from Reading to join our conversation. Hi, Steve. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times. I kind of figured you would call us today.
Yeah, I guess I call sometimes.
So. You do. Yeah, but that's okay.
First, I really appreciate PRR. I use the research all the time. It's one of the few sources that's really objective and helpful, so thank you. I'm a pastor of what's considered a very progressive, wasn't when I got there, but it is now, progressive church in Reading, Pennsylvania, in our part of the state. And it's appalling to me. I don't even use the term Christian anymore for myself because it's been subverted and perverted by white evangelicals. I have more in common with Jews and Muslims and agnostics and atheists than I do with kind of the hateful rhetoric that I hear coming out of not all, but many of those churches.
Steve, I appreciate the call because there are a lot of questions that I have related to what you just brought up. But let me just give Robert P. Jones a chance to respond to your overall comments. Robert?
Well, first, thanks for that. It's striking to hear a pastor, you know, say,
exactly.
I'm reluctant to use the word Christian, and not just the word evangelical, but the word Christian to myself. So I just want to note that in the response. You know, and I think it points to the ways that really over the last decade or so that religion has increasingly become intertwined with partisanship. And that's particularly among white Christians. I think it has taken on even as an ethno-religious identity, that's wrapped up with partisanship. And so I think that's what he's sensing, right? And there is this kind of big divide, in the country. And it's worth noting that if I look at the voting patterns in the religious landscape, and, you were asking me kind of describe very quickly what the voting patterns in recent history look like. It does look like this kind of ethno-religious identity tied to partisanship. And in other words, it would not be inaccurate for me to just say kind of in broad brushstrokes that really since Reagan in the 1980s, if I were going to describe the religious landscape, I could do it fairly accurately by saying white non-Hispanic Christians tend to support Republican candidates, and virtually everyone else tends to support Democratic presidential candidates in election years. And the one example that we've gotten just recently, or counterexample to that we've gotten just recently, or exception to that, are Latino Protestants. And they have basically grown now, again, 4% of the population, but bigger in the Southwest counties. But they are in a fairly tight orbit with white evangelicals, religiously and politically. So they're kind of more charismatic evangelical orientation, and they've kind of picked up the politics that has gone along with that.
Let me quote you to yourself, Robert P. Jones. This is the press material that was sent out, but I thought it was an interesting sentence. You say, in terms of racial and religious diversity, self-identified Democrats look like 30-year-old America, whereas Republicans look like 70-year-old America. Just to underscore what you were saying there.
Yeah, it is, from the standpoint of a healthy democracy, it is a little bit of a troubling trend to see that we do have the way the two, we have two political parties in this country. So it divides us up into kind of binary camps, and that we have had this drift so that we have seen increasingly over the last decade a Republican Party that has really remained a kind of homogeneous white Christian party, even as the country is becoming more and more diverse. The Democratic Party has really absorbed more of those demographic changes within it. And the result is, as you say, if you overlay the two parties by kind of their racial and religious composition onto a generational map, you basically do see that Democrats overlay right at where around 30, they look about like what 30-year-old America looks like. And the Republican Party looks about like what 70-year-old America looks like. And that's really, frankly, not a healthy recipe really for a political party or for the country.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Robert P. Jones, CEO and founder of the Public Religion Research Institute. They came out with a great big study just a couple of days ago looking at the religious landscape in this country, how people identify themselves, some of the geographic differences, some of the age differences, political and racial and ethnic differences as well. You can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us 1-888-477-9499. I should add that Robert P. Jones has a new book. It's called White Too Long: The Legacy of White Supremacy in American Christianity. Well, let me ask you about Donald Trump and the appeal of former President Trump to white evangelical Christians. I mean, this is a man who has bragged about his wealth, who has mistreated people. He has ripped off individuals who tried to make him cabinets for his casinos down in Atlantic City, has cheated on his wives. I mean, I could go on and on and on. What is the appeal to white evangelical Christians?
Yeah, it is probably the question I have spent the most time answering over the last, five years.
I'm
and perhaps
sure,
anything
but it's,
in my
it's,
career,
it's a head scratcher, I think. I mean, to people outside of all this, it's a bit of a head scratcher.
That's absolutely right. I mean, that's why here's what I think is really going on. I think it is absolutely linked to these trends that we've cited, and just to name it specifically, that it is very new in this country that we have, demographically speaking, move from a country that was majority white and Christian to one that is no longer majority white and Christian. So again, go just back to President Obama's when he was running for president, the country was 54% white and Christian. So comfortably majority white and Christian in 2008. That number today is 44%, right? So we've dropped nearly a percentage point a year. And more importantly, we've crossed this threshold of demographically speaking being a majority white Christian country to one that is no longer a white Christian country. And I think that shift and that threshold has really been important and under-emphasized, I think, in what I call even a kind of great freakout, really, among white evangelical Protestants, right? It has been this reaction to the country changing before their eyes. And they were, we have a clue in the words that they used to talk about themselves in the 1970s and 1980s, right? The moral majority.
Right.
And there was this kind of declaration that they were the majority. And historically speaking, I mean, that would have been true. And this is the first time we're the first generation that has a country that's not majority white and Christian. And I think many of the battles that we're seeing are really about reclaiming ownership of a white Christian America. One of the most kind of revealing questions that we asked actually in 2016 when President Trump was elected was whether the country has changed for the better or changed for the worse since the 1950s. It turns out the country at the time was evenly divided on that question. The two political parties were mirror images of one another. The Democratic Party, two-thirds said things have changed for the better. Two-thirds of Republicans said things have changed for the worse. But if you looked at white Christian groups, all of them said that things have changed for the worse. And white evangelical Protestants, three-quarters of white evangelical Protestants in 2016 said that things have changed for the worse since the 1950s. And so if you ask that, what's going on in the 1950s, right? This is the beginning of the civil rights movement. It's Brown v. Board of Education and leading into the Civil Rights Acts in the 1960s. We are seeing this reaction. This is a lot of what my new book is about, this reaction to a diversification of the country where white Christians are no longer the demographic majority and no longer really the political or cultural majority either. And that's quite an adjustment. And so Make America Great Again, the most powerful word in that slogan was the last one.
Again.
Right? Again. Right? This nostalgic, looking back to a kind of mythical golden age of a white Christian America where they essentially owned the country. And with so much evidence showing that, this is no longer true and the country is changing in all kinds of ways around them. And I think that has been the so things like cheating on your wife, being divorced twice, these things really, we could measure this in surveys, actually, that white evangelicals went, for example, from in 2011, we asked a question about whether political leaders, if they committed immoral acts in their private life, could still basically be a good leader in their public life. And back in 2011, only 3 in 10 evangelicals thought that was possible, right? But in 2016, that number went to 72% with Donald Trump at the top of the ticket, thinking that, it was totally fine to have an immoral private life and still be able to be a good leader in your public life. But that's all about Trump and seeing Trump as being able to deliver on a kind of lost white Christian America.
But I think there's something also, and I'm just looking at a couple of quotes and polls. There was a poll that came out in March 2020 among white Protestants. 49% thought that Donald Trump was anointed by God. His former energy secretary think that, that he was appointed by God. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, God wanted Donald Trump to be president. I mean, to me, that, even people who loved Barack Obama, I don't think they thought that God brought him to America. Help us understand this.
Yeah, well, it's important to think about when these kinds of things, and there were also like a lot of conservative evangelical leaders saying that they had prophecy, right, that right. Donald Trump was going to be elected, like in this last election cycle, or even prophecy that even after he lost the election, that he was going to be reinstated. That's still out there.
A kind of second coming, right?
In August. That's right. I mean, it is patterned in many ways after that. And if you ask why people resort to these kinds of things, it is when a community's in crisis, mm-hmm. right? And it looks like, really to deliver, you're going to need divine intervention, right? That the normal means of elections and those kinds of things aren't going to get you to the end game that you think you need to get to. So it's going to require a kind of divine intervention and a chosen one in many ways. And there are tropes in Christianity, that about the end times and all that, that where this fits in quite well. But I think the most important thing, again, is what we're really seeing here is white evangelicals. Again, this is a community I grew up in,
sure.
as a community in crisis. It's an identity crisis, and it has to do with the fact that they've always seen themselves at the center of American power and as the representatives of what it means to be truly American. And as that changes, it really has set off a kind of identity crisis that's made them really susceptible, I think, to conspiracy theories and other kinds of things outside the normal bounds of politics and democratic behavior.
Almost up in a break here. Let me just slip in a quick question. But when you look at the insurrection, the attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, we saw, Confederate flags and American flags and other insignia. But we also saw, Bibles and a noose. That when you look at that tableau, does that tell us something about white Christian America?
It does. And I think that's a really important point. We've got to make sure those images, people who were there that day were telling us who they are, right? But by the symbols they were carrying, there were crosses. The most striking one I saw was, we all remember the images of a Confederate flag being kind of marched through the breach Senate chamber. But there was also a Christian flag, a white flag with a blue canton and a red cross in it. That was the flag that sat behind the pulpit, along with the American flag in the Baptist churches that I grew up in. I saw that flag every Sunday, and it was marched in right alongside the Confederate flag on January 6th.
Well, I want to pick up on that because I know you have written and talked about that as well, your own religious upbringing. That's Robert P. Jones, again, CEO and founder of the Public Religion Research Institute. They have a brand new study looking at the religious landscape here in America. And again, he's got a new book called White Too Long, The Legacy of White Supremacy in American Christianity. You can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call us 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Robert P. Jones about this new report by the Public Religion Research Institute, which found a sharp decline in the number of white evangelical Christians in this country. We're digging deeper into the study to get a portrait of religion in America, including the overall decline in religiosity. Let me get Philip to join us. Philip calling into Radio Times. Philip, go ahead. You are on the air.
Whoops. Hi, Maureen. Hi, Mr. Jones. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I really appreciate this conversation. I just came into it somewhere in the middle, so I haven't been keeping up with what you've been saying. But I primarily wanted to address the question of how let me identify myself here with a bunch of labels. I'm a white evangelical male, 61 years old, retired from the military, and I voted for Trump. And I want to state some of the reasons why I did. I know that there's this big question about, his moral failures, and how could we who stand for truth? We believe we stand for truth. We're followers of Christ. We believe that Christ is who he said he was. And this is monumentally important. But anyway, here's the several reasons, and I'll try to give them as succinctly as I can, and then I'll hang up and I'll listen on the radio.
No, I appreciate that. Go
Number
ahead.
Number one, he's pro American. He's American. Take care of Americans first. I think that's important, not to the exclusion of helping the other parts of the world. And America is the most beneficial nation in the world. We help everybody, even our enemies. Number two, he's pro Israel. I believe that the Jews have more right to be in the land that they're in than we have the right to be in any land that we're in this country. Every people group, no matter where they are on this planet, they have either fought or been beaten, and that's why they're living where they're living. Okay, so and he supported Israel and he moved with courage,
Philip,
and moved,
Philip,
and recognized Jerusalem as the capital.
Fair enough.
Right,
give us
point, and I'm done.
Give us one more. No, go ahead.
Last point. One last point, and that is this. He's pro-life. I could never, ever vote for any political candidate. No, if they had all the things to solve the social ills of our country and all the economic problems and the infrastructure and all that stuff, I could not vote for them if they were not pro-life.
I hear
you. That's the number one issue. Well, thank you very much for taking my call.
No problem, Philip. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let me give Robert P. Jones a chance to respond. As he said, you know, I'm a white evangelical. I'm male. I'm 61, retired military. This is why I supported Trump. Does anything surprise you there?
You know, no, not a lot. I mean, it, you know, pro-America, pro-Israel, pro-life. I mean, it's fits on a bumper sticker, you know, well. And I think that that's what you hear, you know, in many public conversations. It's interesting, you know, when we ask, though, in surveys and we get a kind of representative sample of white evangelicals in the country, it turns out that on the pro-life point, for example, in our fall survey in 2020, just ahead of the elections, we asked about how abortion would affect your vote for major political offices. Only 36% of white evangelicals say that they would only vote for a candidate who shares their views on abortion. So I think that's kind of important to kind of put into kind of a broader, into broader context. And it's also important to remember that while white evangelicals do overwhelmingly, if you ask them about whether abortion should be legal or illegal, and our questions tend to have a four-part thing, it's legal in all cases, legal in most cases, illegal in most, and illegal in all cases. While 77% say that abortion should be illegal in most or all cases, so it's about three quarters who mm-hmm. oppose the legality of abortion generally, if you narrow down to the people who say it should be illegal in all cases, it's only a third of white evangelicals who think abortion should be illegal in all cases. But I think the former point about really it's only a little bit more than a third who say that that's a litmus test issue. And then, you know, if we were going to interrogate this a little bit further, the other thing I would point out is that, you know, what being pro-America means, it means something very specific to most evangelicals. And it does mean something like a Christian country. And even the support for Israel is wrapped up actually in Christian theology, right? It's not necessarily wrapped up in the ultimate well-being of Jewish people. Mm. It's wrapped up in a particular view of the end times where Jews inhabiting the land of Israel and Jerusalem is actually instrumental in bringing about the second coming of Christ. So even that is a sort of wrapped up in a kind of Christian narrative, not necessarily just altruistic support for Jews.
We got a lot of comments here. One from Bill. He says, is the United States starting to look more like Europe, becoming more secular?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's funny, you know, if we were having this conversation, in Paris or London on BBC, it would be news to them that only a quarter of their country are unaffiliated, right? They would say, where all those religious people come from,
yeah, exactly.
Right? So yes, and that we are becoming, you know, this is the highest number of unaffiliated we've ever recorded. And that's true even among young people. I mentioned that young people are nearly 4 in 10 unaffiliated today. But that's different actually than young people were in the past. So if you go back to 1986, for example, only about 1 in 10 young people said that they were religiously unaffiliated. So what we're looking at today is actually genuinely something quite new in terms of the number of unaffiliated people, but we're still far, far different than most Western European nations.
Here's a question from Bill. There's a comment from James. He says, could you comment on the language of punishment and punitive action that Trump talked about, that he was going to punish people who wronged him or were against him? Does that appeal to evangelicals, the idea of punishment?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm not so sure about the punishment motif, but I think the thing that it connects to more broadly is a kind of authoritarian tough guy mentality. I remember being really struck, for example, in 2016, ahead of the election, there was a debate among many evangelical leaders, and much more debate, it turns out, among the leaders than among people in the pews. But there was a kind of robust debate. And I listened actually to a public radio interview between Russell Moore, who at the time was the kind of chief lobbyist for the Southern Baptist Convention, and Robert Jeffers, who is a leading pastor at First Baptist Church in Dallas. And Moore was kind of staking out a kind of never Trump position. And when Robert Jeffers was pressed to why he was one of the earliest supporters of Trump. And when he was pressed, he didn't say anything about pro-America, pro-Israel, or pro-life like the previous caller did. Here's what he said. He said, you know what? The world is such a dangerous place right now. We're in such crisis at home. When I think about who I want in the Oval Office, I want the meanest son of a you-know-what we can find, and that's Donald Trump. Huh. So it was really about, I think, this kind of, again, it's about a crisis mentality based on the shifting demographics in the country. And when you have a crisis, you know, it's when principles tend to go out the window, and you have an end that is more important than the means. And so I think that this, one of the things we really have seen is this really shift in political ethics among white evangelicals from, you know, a principle, a set of an ethic kind of based on principle, and you let the ends, the chips fall where they may because you're sticking to your principles, to really a more utilitarian consequentialist ethic where you have an end that is preserving a kind of white Christian America. We have a candidate who's Republican and who is pledged to do that. And so the means then start mattering less. So you really do slip into kind of supporting a kind of authoritarian who, yeah, one of the things they're going to do is punish those who, we started seeing that over and over, those who cross him. But it means he's kind of a bully, but he's their bully.
Let me ask you about QAnon. And according to some of the research that you have done at PRRI, about 15% of Americans believe in QAnon. QAnon is a kind of religion. You've got this, you know, sort of, you know, allegedly all-knowing presence, whoever QAnon is. You've got this idea that there are Satan-worshipping pedophiles, and that they're drinking the blood of children, which to me reminds me of the Protocols of Zion and the kind of anti-Semitic trope. But mm-hmm. how do you see QAnon and the believers in QAnon? In religious terms.
Yeah, no, I think that's really astute, you know, that this, it does have so many ways, prophecy, you know, these other things that you've mentioned. It is a kind of pseudo-religious movement. There's no doubt about it. And in fact, for any of your folks who are kind of church historians out there, it really mirrors many of what things that got named a Christian heresy in the early church, the Gnosticism. Secret knowledge, a kind of black and white, good versus evil mentality, and only certain people could really know the truth that were on the inside of a clique, those kinds of things. And it's quite remarkable. You know, we did a survey, earlier this year in March, where we're trying to get a sense of, okay, if we put the most extreme kinds of statements out there, how many people will agree, even with, you know, that from QAnon? And so we asked three about the world, the government, the media, the financial world is right. Being controlled by a group of Satan worshiping pedophiles who run a global sex trafficking operation. 15% of the country agree with that, and nearly a quarter of Republicans and a quarter of white evangelicals agree with that. The second one was a kind of apocalyptic. There's a storm coming soon that will sweep away the elites and powers and restore the rightful leaders. 20% of the country believe in that, nearly 3 in 10 Republicans and white evangelicals believing in that. And then the third component was about violence. Yeah. And it was a statement that said, because things have gotten so far off track, true American patriots may have to resort to violence in order to save our country. And again, 15% of the country agreed with that. Nearly 3 in 10 Republicans and a quarter of white evangelicals agreed with that. Now, that's a minority, but it's a, you know, a quarter of white evangelicals kind of agreeing with these three statements across the board is a sizable minority in, you know, in a group that is a very mainstream American religion. And in fact, Southern Baptists are the largest, they're the largest evangelical denomination. They are also the largest single denominational expression of American Christianity in the country.
In fact, you grew up Southern Baptist. What is your religious affiliation, Robert P. Jones?
Yeah, you know, I still consider myself Christian. I mean, I wrote, this last book, I wrote very much in the first person, you know, as someone who, I don't consider myself Southern Baptist anymore because I think have drifted far from what I consider authentic Christianity, but are politicized in a way that I'm uncomfortable with. But I still consider myself Protestant, Christian, and still care deeply, you know, about the health of Christian churches in this country. It's one of the reasons why, you know, this last book is a lot more personal about, you know, how we need to kind of take seriously the ways in which racism and white supremacy have really shaped and distorted the gospel inside of particularly white Christian churches today.
But does that also explain, as you mentioned, the falling numbers when it comes to white evangelical Christians? Now just 14% of the population, that many people are rejecting that history.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. They're rejecting that history, rejecting, the kind of over-politicization, I think, that's there. And again, particularly young people who are finding just that they're just really out of step with the things that they care the most deeply about.
Let me read some more comments. One from Patty. I'll just read a couple of sentences from her. I'm not against religion. I'm against religious officials and leaders weaponizing religion to control people with fear. A comment from Elaine. I'm Lutheran. I'm very frustrated that the word evangelical has been sullied by hateful people. It's a word that just means spreading the good news. And we used to call ourselves Lutheran evangelicals, but now there's so much negative feelings around that term. A comment from Philip. It wasn't just white Christians that voted for Trump. I'm a labor lawyer who works in the South. So many Mexican Americans, families of Southern descent, voted for Trump. And a final comment from Beverly, another reason for declining numbers among evangelicals and Catholics, as well as some other Christian denominations, is their antiquated ideas about women. We expect equality. That's from Beverly. Does that, Robert P. Jones, that kind of sampling of comments square with where you think the country's at?
Those sound, you know, pretty dead on. I'll just put an accent point on the last one. I think that this is right, too. It's something I actually should have mentioned in the other list. But I think, you know, we mentioned the sexual abuse scandal in the Catholic Church. But increasingly, the last convention meeting of the Southern Baptists just last month was one of the central things was that denomination not dealing with and covering up sexual abuse allegations, and that remains an ongoing thing, and it's tied very much to the equality of women. And I think maybe one other way to kind of sum this up, I think there's a moment of reckoning happening among white Christians in general, evangelicals for sure, but also among mainline Protestants and white Catholics, that really is about a kind of 19th century worldview, right, that is a hierarchical one. It's Christians over non-Christians, it's men over women, it's white over black, and that is so still deeply embedded and entrenched in many of the theologies, liturgies, hymns, etc. They're still being practiced among many white Christian groups, and I think many women, people of color, and younger people see those things and feel those things in a way that feels like friction between their more deeply held values and a Christian faith that they see presented in front of them isn't a good fit.
Well, we could go on. So much interest. We figure there's always interest when talking about religion. Robert P. Jones, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Oh, thank you. I was really happy to be here.
Nice to have you with us. And again, CEO and founder of the Public Religion Research Institute. And we've been talking about their brand new study that dug really deep into people's religious affiliations and identities. Author of White Too Long, The Legacy of White Supremacy in American Christianity. For more information about Radio Times, go to whyy.org and look for Radio Times under programs. You can also download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for those calls and comments as well.